Well, it was not unusual that a bike came down the road, but the problem was it was being ridden by a small cat. And the cat had the longest tail I've ever seen in my whole life. And guess what color the cat was? You'd never guess. Sure, you're thinking of all these colors like gray or brown or whatever, but this cat was kind of a purplish color. Purplish and full of hair, you wouldn't believe. It was like fuzzy fur. It was like an angora. That's what they call angora. It's a really fuzzy cat. But it was so fuzzy, it couldn't even see hardly because all the fuzz on his face was sticking in his eyes. He had to keep on moving the fur away from his eyes so he could see where he was going. And he was holding on to the steering wheel, and he was turning to the left and the right and going down the street. And cars were slamming their brakes on because they were getting close to him. And, oh, it was just unbelievable. Then he got off the bike. He just slammed his brakes on, got off the bike, and he reached down and he picked up one of those big yellow stripes in the middle of the road. He just started pulling them off. He went to the next one. He lifted up and peeled it and pulled it and pulled it right off. He went to the next one and pulled it. Pretty soon he had a whole highway down, about 2 miles on the highway. He took off all the yellow stripes. That was a dangerous thing to do. Should have never done anything like that, because when you start doing stuff like that, you start to affect the...
I see that cat try and move one of the borders.
Border?
Yeah, the big border that separates the highway.
Uh-oh.
The big brick ones. I don't see a cat do that every day.
Nope, I never do.
You figure a cat can't even push a VCR.
It depends on how big the cat is. Remember the cat you saw on the computer, on the internet? Mm. That was the size of a small cow.
Yeah.
That was a big cat, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's more like a wolverine.
Yeah, big as a wolverine. That was huge.
Huge. Size as a baby cow.
Yeah, that was a big cat. That was a huge one. Wonder what it eats for dinner. Probably has steak and eggs for dinner.
Probably has fingernails.
Harley, stop the blowing the holes in the darn sheets.
Is he trying to blow balloons up or something?
Trying to blow the balloons up, yeah.
Did you hear that?
Yeah.
And he shook the whole room. The whole room shook. And the guy dropped right down from the ceiling and fell in front of everybody. They all yelled and jumped back. And the guy just stood there looking at everybody. Then he turned around and looked at the other people. Then he turned around again and looked at the other people. He didn't know which way to run because he was completely surrounded by all these people. He just reached on his rope that he was hanging from and just started pulling himself up, back up to the ceiling again. I don't know who dropped the rope down to him, but he didn't come down that way. But in any case, he went right back up to the ceiling and got back on the roof, and people were on their cell phones calling the police, and oh, there was just a big mad mess. They were screaming and yelling, running around. They didn't know what the guy was going to do. They didn't know if he was going to start attacking them or what. They just started yelling and screaming. The guy was on the roof and already almost gone. I mean, as soon as the security guards got there and they climbed to the top of the roof and they looked around, they didn't see anybody, so he had to gotten away. So he got away, he got away. Well, was he going to come back again? That was the question. How soon was he going to come back? And where was he going to stand? Where was he going to fall from, if he was going to fall at all? But all those questions had to be answered before 7 o'clock for the special news report on the local TV station. And the mayor came out and said something to the effect, "We're going to catch that guy if the last thing we do." Now, this is the second time he dropped from a ceiling in the middle of a big crowd, like at a wedding was one, and then this one here was some kind of a gathering of like a family reunion or something. But he told everybody, he said, "And when we catch him, we're going to give him 20 years automatically at the penitentiary. We're going to get him and we're going to put him away for 20 years. And everybody just applauded and clapped, yelled and screamed, "Ah, that's great," they thought. "We're going to get that guy. We'll get him if it's the last thing we do," that's what he said. And he probably meant it, but didn't know if he could hold out, because sometimes they don't always pull through. Well, a couple of days went by and nothing happened. You know, he didn't drop in any other place, but there was a party going on over at the Jacobson's house, and they were all in the middle of the living room, and without notice, all of a sudden, boom, crash, there he was, standing in the middle of everybody, and everybody backed away and just started staring at each other and started yelling and screaming, and there was a frantic mess, and the guy himself, he didn't know what to do. He was turning around in circles, and then once again, that rope dropped down from the ceiling, and he reached onto it and started pulling himself back up again, but one little kid got an idea. He said, "You're not going to get away from me." He said, "I'm going to get you, and I'm going to get you good." So he jumped onto the rope behind the guy as he started to climb up the rope, and as soon as he got to the top, the guy ran off, and then the little boy was coming up behind him. But just as he was going to get to the top, somebody stuck out their hand with a pair of scissors and snipped the rope, and he fell down. The little boy cried, ran to his mother, and he hugged his mother and all that stuff like that. But the guy was gone again. So the mayor came back, and, "We're going to get this guy if it's the last thing we do." And everybody said, "Yeah, we've heard that before. Nothing's happening. He just dropped in on a party over there at the corner of 5th and 27th. And nobody ever caught him there. Nobody catches him anywhere. What are you going to do about it?" "Well, we're going to put all our forces together, and we're going to get everybody in town on the case, and we're going to get him if it's the last thing we do." Yeah, right. Well, another day and a half went by, and no action. Somebody said, "We're going to catch him. I know we are. It's just a matter of time, because we'll get a net, or we're going to have somebody tackle him." Somebody brave enough it is, because not many people around here are that brave to do something like that. But we'll get them. Are you okay, Harley?
Yeah, I went down the wrong tube.
How many tubes you got?
Two.
Where?
Breathing and drinking and eating.
Yeah, did you have the breathing tube, and then you've got the tube for your
food,
yeah. Yeah, drinking and eating.
I got the breathing tube. What happened to the ending of our story?
Oh, the ending of our story? Well, the guy eventually dropped down in front of an all...
All-you-can-eat thing.
An all-you-can-eat buffet. He dropped right in the middle of everybody and dropped right onto the table, right where they had the biggest meal of all. And everybody stood back, and as expected, they all screamed and ran around. Well, the guy, he was going to climb back up the rope, but whoever was dropping the rope down, either it got caught or forgot to drop on the rope, but he didn't have a rope to climb up, so now he was stuck. He is going to have to run away, and that same little boy that tried to climb the rope the last time realized that this was an opportunity that he was going to take advantage of. So he ran as fast as he could up to the guy, and he leaped up into the air, and he grabbed onto him right from behind, and he hung on to him, hung right onto him, until they both fell to the ground. Well, by that time, everybody knew that he was captured. So they all moved in closer. Some of the bigger guys there just grabbed one arm, and the other big guy grabbed the other arm, and they held him, waited for the police to get there. And the mayor was right in front of the police as he walked in the front door. Said, "I knew we were going to get you. It just would take a matter of time. And now we caught you, and we're going to put you away, buddy." And he said, "Oh, boy." Now he was caught. He said, "Now what am I going to do?" He said, well, they put him in jail for a couple of days, and then they had the hearing, and they put him to court, and the judge said, "Okay, this is how it's going to work. You've been jumping in on people for the last 50 days, and we're getting tired of it. So we're going to sentence you to 20 years hard labor at the Pithony Penitentiary, and take him away." And sure enough, they took him away, and they put him in the penitentiary, and he stayed there for 20 years. But when he got out, he was tired of dropping from ceilings because, for one thing, he was already 20 years old. He was kind of like more grown up and realized it wasn't a very good thing to do. So he learned his lesson.
What is this?
That's my paper. That's my paper for, I got my questions on there. And is there a pen? There should be a pen in there, too. It's not in my pocket, so it's got to be in the bed here somewhere. Here it is. I got it. Thanks, Harley. Otherwise, I'd have laid on top of it, broke it open, and had ink all over. Now we're set.
You just grew out of my leg.
Yeah. And so, in any case, the guy learned his lesson, never did drop from the ceiling again, and the judge was happy, the people were happy, everybody was happy. So that was the end of that story. So time for night-night. Time to get some rest. Time to conk out. How many ways are there to say go to sleep? You know, conk out, get some rest, lay down. What would you say?
Take a nap.
Take a nap. What else?
Get some shut eye.
get some shut eye. That's a good one.
Take a snooze.
So yeah, take a snooze. Oh, I guess there's a bunch of we just can't think of right now.
Did he say shut eye?
Yeah, Hardy did.
Okay, that's right.
Okay, good night, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Two trucks, four cars, and a small boat. Doing everything they normally do, except one would like to roll over. The others would never want to roll over because they didn't have any idea how to do it. But the ball bearings and the wheel were stuck, so how could they possibly roll over? The car door opened up. The person sitting in the car just turned to the side and fell out, right onto the ground face first. Didn't scream, didn't yell, didn't howl, didn't do anything. He just fell out face first. Well, of course, everybody in the area thought there was something wrong with the door. And was it the door? That's a question that even the police had questions for. Because when they brought it into the shop, the window looked perfectly fine, the candles were burning just right, and the wagon came across the floor like as if nothing was wrong, so we knew everything had to be okay. And the pants he was wearing, they had no pockets in, so how could he possibly have the key that they claimed he had? And the key wasn't even the issue here. What was the fact is that he had something that he wasn't supposed to have. But was it the book they were talking about? Was it the magazine or the newspaper or the newsletter? Exactly what was it? Was it the tabloid? Well, somebody hollered up and said, maybe this is what it is. And it was a notebook. He said, was this what you were looking for? And the guy, without any warning whatsoever, just jumped right up and said, yeah, that's it. And he pointed his finger at the notebook and he ran right over to it and tripped over a small, I don't know what it was, looked like a roller skate or something, some kind of a shoe, and he fell over. It was a blue shoe. He said, wait a minute now, I wear blue shoes. So he looked down at his feet and thought, well, that's the problem. My shoe's missing and I tripped over my own shoe. So there he picked his shoe up and put it on his other foot. There now he had two shoes on. And he started to walk down that little road. The road was awfully narrow. In fact, it was so narrow you could almost call it a path. And there are small trees in the way. There are little, fruit trees of some sort. They looked like either apples or some kind of a plum, maybe. I'm not sure. I don't know if it was an apple tree or not because they were kind of, too small for apples. But then again, maybe it was just a small apple tree that produced small apples. The grapes were right nearby. They were much too small. And, of course, the banana tree over there over the fence, that seemed to be like in the most luxurious part of town there was. And that's where all the rich people lived, who had parties all the time, and their Rolls Royces were out in the backyard parked, and their Mercedes Benzes were out there, and everybody just sat and partied and had a great time drinking and laughing and all that kind of stuff. And then from off to the side, Jill came in. And she swung in on that inner tube swing that was attached to the tree right inside the rich people's yard. And she comes sliding in right across everybody's table and right to the other side of the yard. It was a huge tree it was hanging from. And she went right to the other side and jumped off. And then the rubber tire just came swinging back and forth and back and forth and back and forth until it stopped right in the middle. And all the little rich kids got up to it. And they started to just play with it and have fun, and they loved it. And they took big dollar bills out of their pockets and all the $100 bills out of their pockets, and they stuffed it inside the tire and just for fun. And then they started to swing it back and forth and back and forth. And while it was swinging, a lot of the money was just falling out all over the place. But they were giggling and laughing, and oh, they were chuckling and having a great time, and it's swinging this tire back and forth and back and forth, and you just have spent most of the afternoon doing that. And then, of course, the airplane didn't have any idea which way it was going because it was going north, and then all of a sudden it turned left. Left, of course, was east, and if it was going to turn right, then, of course, it was going to be west. But nobody really knew that they were flying upside down, because the only way you can fly west, if you're going north, is to be upside down. If you're going to turn right, you can't turn right if you're going north and go east or west, I should say, because you'd really be going east. So you'd have to be upside down in order to turn that direction. So, well, they got it all figured out. They got their books out and everything. They opened them up and looked on page 146, and they could see the picture of the compass, that north was straight up, east was to the right, west was to the left, and south was toward the bottom. Well, now they knew it. They looked it up, figured it out, realized that the balls on the tree were just perfect for their size and weight and the color, and everything fit perfectly right. And so that's why if anybody has a present that they're going to have on Christmas, they should open it immediately before anybody else even tells them to open it, because if they don't open it right away, you'll never know what's inside of it, because you may forget to open it. And then how are you going to feel? You know, the brooms that they use are not necessarily the best brooms, but they work. They get up most of the trash off the ground. And what's going to happen if they're not going to be able to sweep up all these wrappings from all the presents? Is that broom going to be considered a grade A? Or is the broom going to be considered just an average broom that will be worthy? You know, is it just going to be just a, like you might as well just wrap some straw around a stick and call it a broom, because if it's not going to do a good job, why have it? You know, today's people are a little bit different than what they were back in the 1800s, and they had horses and carriages and wagons and stuff like that that used to handle all their wheat and all their food items. They used to carry across land far, far away to their house where they put it down in the cellar. Especially when they had meat like that, what did they do with it? They put the meat down in the cellar with big cubes of ice, and they put sawdust on top of it. And the sawdust is just like a powder. It's almost like a, well, we'll just say it's like a cheese all grated up like that, but it's actually wood. That's from there. When they saw the logs, it creates that sawdust. From all the little pieces of wood that they sawed off the logs, falls into a big box, and then they take that big box and they start sprinkling it over the dry, over the ice. They probably had, I don't know if they had dry ice back then, but they had regular ice, big cubes of ice that they used to use. And they used to put the sawdust on top of it to use it as an insulator so that it would stay colder longer and it wouldn't melt as fast, making it sure that they would have ice for the whole summer. Could you imagine having no ice at all during the summer? You couldn't have any ice drinks of any kind. You couldn't have any lemonade of any kind. Why, you couldn't even walk outside on a beautiful day, because you had to have some kind of nice, cool, refreshing drink to enjoy the day that you were in. The wagons that came by and the trains that came by shooting smoke into the air. You know, a lot of people complained about the smoke, because the smoke was so strong in the air. You know, you used to burn coal. Coal is that black rock that they used to put on the stoves, and it used to burn really good, and they used to heat up a lot of homes, but it used to also cause a lot of smoke, and that black smoke throughout the whole town used to fill it up, and people would go out and smell. They'd smell that smoke, and they'd start to cough. Well, pretty soon the mayor would say something to the effect, I've got to get this smoke cleared up out of this place because I can't take it anymore. And this smoke has got to stop now before somebody gets injured. And of course he meant by they could keep breathing the smoke and their lungs would go bad from breathing all that smoke. In fact, in 2 weeks there's going to be no burning coal. We're going all gas, he said. Well, everybody tried. They tried to go without coal burning, but they had a hard time because not many people were set up to use gas. And that's when the red ball bounced into the picture. The ball dropped right in exactly the same place it did the last time we talked to you. And that particular ball now had little gold lining around it. Little gold beads. And these gold beads are worth a lot of money nowadays, you know. One little ounce of gold is worth about $1,000. And this little red ball had little beads all around it, each one valued at about $1,000. And if you counted every one of those little beads around this little ball in all these different directions, there would be at least 500 little balls. Could you imagine all these little balls adding up to $500,000? Well, that's exactly what it was. And they took this little ball and they put it into a small, looked like a cage, and they locked it up with a great big padlock and said, I'm going to take this to the bank. That's what the man said. I'm going to take this to the bank, and I'm going to cash it in, and I'm going to get my money's worth, $500,000. That's what he said. And he went all the way to the bank. He brought it into the bank and put it on the counter and said, I would like all my money's worth for this big red ball, and I want it right now. Well, the bank was more than happy to give it to him because it was $500,000 they had to give up. But if the bank were to hold it for just 2 weeks, the value of the ball was going to go up even higher, meaning that when they sold it, it would be even more money for them. So they said, yes, sir, we'll give you this money. We'll give it to you right now. And if you can wait until tomorrow morning, we'll give you the lump sum of the $500,000 in a small bucket. Now, you can take this bucket and put it anywhere you want or carry it anywhere you want to go, but no matter what, this money is going to be yours, and you can use it any way you want. Even if you don't want to use it at all, it's perfectly fine. It's just a matter of how you want to do it. It's all going to depend on you. Well, the yellow shoes weren't included in the 1917 factory until 1927. The yellow shoes were the thing that people wanted, but they couldn't produce them because one man in the office said, there ain't no yellow shoes here, not in this entire factory, and we're never going to produce yellow shoes because they seem to be inadequate for our society. Well, they decided to build them anyway. So they put on the rubber sole, and they put on the rubber sides, and they put on the sides of the shoe that hooked up all the laces, the little, what they call eyes in the shoe. Those are the holes in the shoe. And then they put the shoelace in, and they tie it up. And the guy said, if anybody here wants a pair of yellow shoes, they're going to have to go somewhere else because I will not produce them. Will not produce them. But they were producing them. They were producing them behind his back. He didn't even know it. The people wanted the shoes, and they built them themselves. Every single shoe in the entire place was being built in secret. They had a small room in the back that built the soles. They had another small room over on the west wing that built the tops with the little eyes in for they put the shoelaces in. And they had one more that built the very, very toe part of the shoe. They had different departments all over the factory that built this yellow shoe. And the boss would always say every day,
now, I don't want anybody building yellow shoes, and if you do get caught trying to build them, you will be expelled from our factory. Please, do not make yellow shoes because we think they are too bright and they do not fit the natural habitat of the environment.
Well, nobody knew what he was talking about, so they just said, well, let's just keep building them. And for 14 years, they built these yellow shoes all behind his back. And they were being sold out in the stores all across town, but nobody knew where they were coming from. All they knew was that they were being delivered and they were being sold. That was one of the nicest things about it, because even the paper airplanes couldn't keep up with the competition. Even those little paper airplanes with the little holes inside that kept on going through everybody's doorways and through the windows and across the classrooms, those paper airplanes meant a lot to America back in 1974, because those paper airplanes had messages inside that some people don't even realize. Writers, great writers from around the world would write very famous quotes and phrases and stories on regular pieces of paper, folded up like a paper airplane, and then shoot it across the city. Some would even go as high as the Eiffel Tower on top and shoot out a small paper airplane that would go for miles and miles and miles and land in somebody's yard. When they would pick it up and read it, they would be impressed by what they read. They would be totally impressed and would read it to all their relatives, and they would read it to kids in school. They would read it to even important people across town, because they found this little paper airplane and they opened it up and they read it, and now they were considered very famous themselves. But the important people that wrote the information in the paper airplanes, they also enjoyed hearing the stories from people who found them. Because wouldn't it be nice to be able to take a paper airplane, throw it out from, like, say, the high water tower that you're on, and throw it out into the wind and let it see, go flying around and round and round and get blown across the entire town and land in somebody's small yard, and you know where it came from, but they don't know where it came from, and you hear the story on the news about Mrs. John Robertson had just received a small airplane in your backyard and opened it up this afternoon and discovered that it was valued at more than $527. And so they just did this day in, day out, and people were just loving it. Everybody would get something in their front yard sooner or later. And always on the newscast it was, well, Mr. and Mrs. Anderson received their paper airplane today, and they'll read to us later on this evening exactly what it said in the airplane, so stay tuned and listen to the story tonight at 5 o'clock. And now this stuff was going on for days and weeks and maybe even sometimes months, but eventually came to a stop when the man from the local hardware store said, "Our paper supplies are almost out. We do not have any more paper for the people of this city to throw paper airplanes around town. We did not receive any paper from our supplier, so therefore we cannot make any more airplanes for anyone here in town. So please, effective immediately, do not make any more airplanes. Do you copy?" And of course everybody understood. But the airplanes continue to be made because some people stockpiled the paper, meaning that they had extra paper in their back rooms that they would use to make paper airplanes. And this went on for days and weeks and months, and somebody said her diamond ring was in one of the airplanes. And she would always, of course, be concerned because she didn't know where they were actually being sent due to the fact that the wind actually delivered them. "My diamond ring is in the airplane," she said. And sure enough, somebody that next day, "We have this special report that Mrs. Jones Anderson just opened up a small paper airplane and pulled out a big diamond ring valued at $1,976. So congratulations to Anderson for their great finding today. This has been a special report." And this would go on and on and on for more time than you can imagine. And everybody was so excited because the windows didn't close like they were supposed to. They just simply glided closed, glided shut. And these were the most spectacular, smoothest running windows you'd ever seen. In fact, they were almost considered automatic, although they weren't, but they appeared to be automatic because all you had to do is simply touch the middle of the window and it would just gently glide down like it was on air, just softly settling down, and it would close rock-hard, sealing tight. And it would just lock, seal tight, so tight you could not get air in or out. That was perfect, unheard of in those days. It was like an automatic window that closed by itself, smooth as silk, and just it was working just perfect until Bud Harrington came to town. Bud Harrington had a small hammer he used to use. He used to bang it on all the windowsills as he went around town. He'd bang it on that one. He'd bang it on that one. He'd say, "These windows are insufficient. They are not good enough for our society. Therefore, all these automatic windows shall be removed." And so that's what they did. They started to take out all the windows in all the homes that had the automatic windows in. And the people were so disappointed because they were working so good. But this guy thought he knew all the answers, and so they started to pull them out. And they pulled every single one out. That's when he realized in his pocket was a small coin. It was a yellow one. And the little yellow coins were a lot more valuable than those blue ones and the red ones. The yellow ones seemed to have so much value that they surpassed anything that they've ever had in the past. These were the most spectacular things that anybody could ever have. And then he cashed it into the bank, and the bank said, "Well, we're going to have to give you all of our money because this little yellow button or whatever it is, coin or disc, is actually worth $3,500,000,000,000,000. And so that's what they did. He gave them all the money from the bank, every single penny, plus they owed him $7,000,000,000,000. And so that's the way it ended. He had all the trillions and billions of dollars all for himself. And he started his own bank, and now he is the banker, and he is the one that gives out loans to the people and also does all the banking for everybody in town. And that's how it was, and that's how it ended in 1756 on Hatchaway Road back in the old town of Manahooga, Illinois.